I wanted to start out, I was looking for something different, but found these little sayings about, like, the power of speech and words, including written words. And there were a couple things I've remembered just from years back, and then some I just saw I thought were interesting. So I want to read some of these to you just to kind of set the tone for where we're headed this morning. And so I won't tell you the authors of these. I'm just going to read them. Words are like eggs dropped from great heights. You can no more call them back than ignore the mess they leave when they fall. And this one I always remembered, loose lips sink ships. You know that comes from World War II, trying to control information flow, and, you know, it basically means careless words can ruin things. How about this? There exists for everyone a sentence, a series of words that has the power to destroy you. Another sentence exists, another series of words that could heal you. If you're lucky, you'll get the second, but you can be certain of getting the first. Like this, a drop of ink may make a million think. And then I remember this morning, we've all heard this, the pen is mightier than the sword. Another one, be careful of the words you say. Keep them short and sweet. You never know from day to day which ones you'll have to eat. One of the hardest things in life is having words in your heart that you can't utter. That is a powerful one, and that's not just words you're not able to, but you wish you could, but you know you shouldn't. Our words should be purrs instead of hisses. And I want to, actually, I've always heard my wife say this in her family. This was like one of their famous sayings. Many a truth is spoken in jest. I think we all have an awareness of the power of our words and our speech. And today we want to look at James and what he has to say about that. It's kind of funny. He starts out with sort of a specific thing and then goes into the topic more broadly and basically kind of starts out, which I feel bad that I'm the one doing this, and tells us that teaching, and I would like to expand that, especially in our age, communicating is a risky business. And so he starts out kind of aiming at those who desire to make their life about teaching or communication. It says in chapter 3, verse 1, not many of you should presume to be teachers, my brothers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly. I didn't read that verse before I began teaching, you know, in the church and speaking in the church. And I'm sure that part of his concern is that when you're in the business of communicating or teaching, and I think to get us thinking this way today, I would like to expand what he's saying, not only to the spoken word, but to the written word. Because we're in a day with the advent of the computer, the internet, social media forms, every one of us can be authors. And probably almost everyone in this room has written something, even with the intention of influencing people or convincing them of something. The problem is every time we open our mouths or put our fingers on the keyboard or our pen to the paper, we have the potential to greatly help or greatly harm people. And I know I keep seeing almost daily friends who I have, you know, various friends on Facebook who are saying, I'm not going to write anymore, or I'm going to fast from Facebook, or I am not going to say, like we saw this week, I'm not going to talk about politics on Facebook through the rest of the campaign, because they just can't stand the bickering and just the mean words that are being said. And so they don't want to engage in it. And so James tells us, you know, you shouldn't be quick to think, I want to be a communicator. And so where I think he's going to focus, and he kind of approaches this in different ways, and so I made this my Second point, control your tongue and you'll control your life. Which sounds kind of strong, but as we go through this, I think we'll see that at the heart of his understanding is the tongue, our speech, is kind of right at the center of our life. And if we can get control of that, we'll find that we'll actually have control of a lot of other things in our lives. He says in verses, I wrote 2-5. We'll get to 5 eventually, I think, but I don't have it written right there. We all stumble in many ways. If anyone is never at fault in what he says or in what she says, she is a perfect woman or a perfect man, able to keep his whole body in check. And I think that verse right there, while we'll look at the rest of it, is like pretty key. And it's kind of unique in what he's saying. If we can keep our mouth in check, saying we are likely able to keep our whole body in check. If we can control our speech, we probably can control our behavior, which I think everybody said that's an awesome thing if we can do that. We all know we have an intentional way of living. There's outcomes that we want. There's ways that we want to act, ways that we want to interact, communicate. But man, is it hard to actually do what you genuinely desire rather than something else. And he's saying a key here is if we can get it here, you know, at our mouth, we'll be able to get the rest of it. And, we do slip up in many ways. All of us have slipped up in a lot of ways. And I'm sure all of us have had a time or two where we wish we could get our words back. And it was almost like they just slipped out. I didn't want to say that. You know, I think we among us have this joke, goes back to a famed psychotherapist. And have you ever, that was a Freudian slip, I didn't really want to say that. I may have thought it, but I didn't really want to say that. Or it just came out not as I intended, and we're embarrassed or we feel bad about what actually came out of our mouth. There were a couple things I ran across, one from ancient Jewish literature in Sirach 1916. It's not in the Bible. It says, a person may make a slip without intending it. Who has never sinned with his tongue? Anybody here never sinned with your tongue? Proverbs 18:6-7. The lips of fools bring them strife, and their mouths invite a beating. I thought, did he really say that? That's I looked at a bunch of translations. They all say that. And their mouths invite a beating. I guess that maybe is the precursor to road rage. The mouths of fools are their undoing, and their lips are a snare to their very lives. Or a famous ancient writer lived about 70 years, a little bit before and a little after the time of Jesus, Philo of Alexandria. And James probably was aware of this. Let me kind of read it slowly, make sure we don't miss it. He says, but if a man succeeded, as if handling a lyre or a lyre, depending on how you pronounce that, maybe for us, think of a guitar, a string instrument. If he succeeded in bringing all the notes of the thing that is good into tune. Now, listen to this part. Bringing speech into harmony with intent and intent with deed. Such a one would be considered perfect and of truly harmonious character. If we could only bring it all together, what we actually intend, what we say, and what we do. If we could bring some consistency, wow, would we be amazing people. People of great character and maturity. Really coming into fulfillment of the life that God has for us. We dealt with this number of weeks earlier, James 1:26, but I thought it would be good to read it in this context. If anyone considers himself religious and yet does not keep a tight rein on his tongue, he deceives himself and his religion is worthless. Most of us are more familiar with then what follows about the religion that God favors is to take care of orphans and widows and to keep oneself pure from the pollution of the world. And we kind of miss what preceded it, what was in front, saying, you know, if we really don't have control of our tongue, there's not a whole lot of value in the faith that we say that we have or that we speak of. Because a true faith, a powerful faith, a faith worth having will really affect our speech. And so then he wants to go on and kind of show us, just remind us probably, little things make a big difference. I don't know if I've read any of them, probably glanced through their series of little booklets, Don't Sweat the Small Things. But there is a level which actually we should sweat the small things, because little things can have a huge impact. And James wants to give us a few examples just from life that most of us would be aware of. So verses 3 through 5, when we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. So you have this image of a big horse with just this small bit, and that's all it takes to turn it one direction or another. Or take ships as an example. Although they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they're steered by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants to go. It's pretty amazing when you think that small thing can change the course of something that big. Likewise, so here's the comparison, likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider, now I give this another example, consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. And if you've watched the news at all over the past month or two with Colorado and the Colorado Springs area, you know that a small thing, in some case they thought it was a lightning strike somewhere, and then sets off a fire that destroys thousands of acres and hundreds of homes. And he just wants us to be aware. Look, you may think, you know, what's the tongue? I mean, the hands are powerful. You know, my feet, I can run. My body, I could wrestle you down. The tongue's a very small thing, saying, but don't forget how things generally work in life. It's the little things. It's the little things that get you and that get others. And the tongue's little, but man, is it powerful. And the strange thing, I think our tendency and my tendency is to compartmentalize and think, well, how I act is not the same as what I say, because I oftentimes say things I wish I hadn't said or I think aren't consistent with my behavior. But James sees these things as so tied together that you can't really have two separate lives, one the way you talk and another the way you live, and that our speech has incredible impact on our own lives, but also on our families, on our church. I mean, how many churches have been destroyed, split by arguments that people have, and the way they talk to each other, and it makes somebody else mad, and they leave, and before you know it, there are camps, and we're all attacking each other, and the church, if it doesn't dissolve, it at least splits, or it loses its testimony in the community, and it's down the tubes. Words have power to affect our whole communities, and we know our nation. So words, they can heal or they can destroy. That words can build bridges or they can build walls. I mean, think about it in your own life. I can think about mine. Once your words have built a wall, how hard is it to take that wall down? Maybe I'm an exceptionally proud person, I don't know, you know, compared to most people. I haven't gone around asking, how proud are you? But I can tell you, once I've built the wall, I have a really hard time. It takes tremendous effort to bring it down and then repair the damage that's been done. And it seems like everything in you doesn't want to go there. And so we often let relationships die. They move apart, move on, and they end because we weren't able to take down the wall that we built. We don't know how to build bridges with our words. I was trying to think of different images. I don't know that I even captured it with three of them that I wrote down here, because we see that speech kind of often sort of leads the way into our behavior, and that we first start talking, and then the next thing we know, we're acting out on those words, whether they're kind words or angry words. They're often followed by actions that are kind of empowered by them. And I was thinking of different images that their words are like a floodgate, you know, on a dam. It's like it just opens up all this stuff that there and allows it to begin to kind of flow up. But it may start with the trickle, but if you let it keep going, man, there's a whole bunch more that's behind it. And words seem to be able to kind of unhook us in that way. I thought, too, it's kind of like the browser on the internet. Once you're there, man, you got access to so much. One little thing is kind of the key connecting point to everything else. And our speech is like that. It taps into everything that's in us, and it also taps in to so much that's in other people and goes a lot further than we probably ever wished. It's like a hinge on the door. It opens us to everything or it closes us to everything. I don't know what the best image, but I see speech as kind of being there right in the center of our lives, our world and other people's worlds. And somehow when we begin to talk, it can either destroy that or bring it together, but it has an amazing impact way beyond what we ever thought. And that's what James wants us to get as we like consider our words and our speech. He goes on to say, and I'd have somebody mention something this morning, and I thought, I would have to say that in general, James seems to have sort of a more general fear, concern about our speech, sees it as dangerous. And that was my next point. I said, the tongue is dangerous. So he goes on and says, verses 6 through 8, the tongue also is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. Now, James, I mean, this is the brother of Jesus. He's writing this. He's a leader in the church. He knows the power of God. I have no doubt he's seen the good power of speech. In fact, he's writing. He's using words right here. And yet he wants to make sure we get this about our words. The tongue also is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole person, sets the whole course of his life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. Wow, that's a strong image. Then he says, all kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and creatures of the sea are being tamed and have been tamed by man. And maybe he's thinking about, back to the creation story, God's created everything and kind of given man care over all of it. He says, but no man can tame the tongue. It's a restless evil full of deadly poison. It's like, wow. So we can control animals. We can control our environment. We can control the internet, but we can't control our own tongue. He's like, watch out, man. Take this thing very seriously. Probably what we wish we could do is just muzzle ourselves somehow, you know, carry a muzzle. When I think I'm going to get in trouble, just put that thing on. I don't see that working. In fact, I was reading in the Psalms during the week, I think it's Psalm 39, where David's saying, I decided not to speak, but then I didn't even say good things, and I couldn't stand it. It was like burning inside of him. We're not going to be able to just muzzle our mouths. I wanted to reframe verse 6 here. This was actually one of the commentators, just to make sure we kind of get the scope of this. He says, and the tongue is a fire. It corrupts the whole person. Sets the whole course of his life on fire. So it not only corrupts me as a person, but it can set my whole life on fire and is itself set on fire by hell. So I just drew for myself, you know, a little, I don't know what you call it. so that we see the interconnectedness of it, if hell is influencing us, it will impact our speech. It will color our speech. It will influence it. If we are speaking in this way, it will end up impacting our very life, who I am as a person. And if it impacts who I am as a person, it'll impact the whole course of my life, the choices I make, what I do with relationships, the decisions I make, how I can affect my family, my community, my church. Everything is impacted by this little thing. I ran across this saying while I was looking things up. I thought it fit here. It says, watch your thoughts. They become your words. Watch your words. They become your actions. Watch your actions. They become your habits. Watch your habits. They become your character. Watch your character. It becomes your destiny. Man, it starts, you know, in here and in here, but it goes really far. I don't remember how I ran across this week, but something I got in an email, and so I was looking back at it. There's a Christian journal called Sojourners, and I'm sure they've been experiencing some of the same things as people respond to articles and letters and comments. So they've developed a comment community covenant. And I liked it, so I just adjusted a little bit, and I wanted to read it to you. These elements are just four elements here. I thought, wow, this would be good in every community, and not just, you know, on the internet, but face-to-face as well. One is, I will express myself with civility, courtesy, and respect for every member of the community, especially toward those with whom I disagree, even if I feel disrespected by them. Number two, I will express my disagreements with other community members' ideas without insulting, mocking, or slandering them personally. Number three, I will not exaggerate others' beliefs nor make unfounded prejudicial assumptions based on labels, categories, or stereotypes. I will always extend the benefit of the doubt. And the fourth one, which kind of makes all this work, I think, I will accept and offer accountability for violating these principles based not on what ideas are expressed, but on how they are expressed. But these would be good rules for our life. No matter what community, if it's an online community or a real community, if it's a local community or national community or international community, this is what James is getting at the heart of, because our words are so powerful, can be so helpful or so damaging that we need to take account of what we're doing and the things that we are saying. And So I think part of, and this is what we're going to get to in just one second here, you can't just tame the tongue. It's a deeper issue. As we've seen, all this stuff is connected, our speech, who we are, our behavior, our interactions, the impact of our lives. And so you can't just, it ain't going to work, I don't think, just to control your mouth. I mean, we're all doing it, and we're still all messing up as well. In fact, James says, the thing with the tongue is it can go either way in terms of, you know, what it does. So verse 9 through 12, he says, with the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who've been made in God's likeness. Which he says, do you see the contradiction in that and the kind of the irony in that? Out of the same mouth come praise, particularly probably on Sunday mornings, and cursing. My brothers, this should not be. Can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? Now we're getting into sources here. My brothers, can a fig tree bear olives? No, it has, you know, it bears what's in its nature. Or a grapevine bear figs? Neither can a salt spring produce fresh water. You ought to read this, go back. I've been reading it, you know, all week, and plus as I've been working on James, there's just so much here. It's so scary, but also so rich in what he's trying to get us to think about. And he's beginning here to point us to this reality that what comes out of us is based on what's in us. It's representative or reflective of our nature. And so if we're really going to get control of our speech and our words and our tongue, we need to do something about who we are. We need to address, you know, our character. We need to address our nature. We need to address what's coming into our life. What's the controlling force or source of our life? And so my last point here, which as we were working in the office here, we were like, are you sure this is what you wanted to say? It doesn't sound right. It's that the key is in the controlling source. Not controlling the source, but really the key's in the source that's controlling us. What is it that's feeding us? What is it that's informing us? What is it that's shaping our lives? And so James kind of finishes this section with this, verses 13 and 18. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show it by his good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, don't boast about it or deny the truth. And here's where he begins this distinction. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but it's earthly, unspiritual, of the devil. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. But the wisdom that comes from heaven, and we'll read the rest, but let's just stop a second. So see, what James understands is there's kind of two worlds, two main dynamics at work in the world that can also be at work in our lives. One is that demonic, evil, and he used the term earthly in that the earth being under the power of this evil world. And it's putting things in our hearts. And then out of that flows these harmful words in speech or writing. On the other side is the wisdom that comes from heaven. And look at the language he uses to describe it. It is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial, probably goes back to thinking about how we treated the difference between how we treat the poor and the rich earlier on in James, impartial and sincere, peacemakers who sow in peace, raise a harvest of righteousness. And maybe that kind of captures it all for him. Peacemakers, this is what God is doing. God's wisdom, the wisdom from above, the wisdom that comes into our lives through our life with Jesus Christ makes us peacemakers, not warriors, not destroyers, not herders, not pain inflictors, but brings peace wherever we go. Brings good into people's lives, bears good fruit, is full of mercy. You know, I'm always saying I have all these experiences while I'm driving in Houston, and you know, I'm getting better. I'm getting better. Yesterday, I was coming back from. We like to eat pizza usually on the weekend. One night, I was picking up the pizza, driving home, and this young guy in a really big pickup truck, and I'm in my smaller Honda. I don't know. Decides he wants to like get moving fast, and so he hits the gas, comes up behind me, and gets like about this far from me. I don't know where he wanted me to go. And I just started thinking, if we stop, I'd love to get out there, pull you out of the truck, go, what are you doing, you know? I didn't. As I turned the corner from my street, I started laughing, thinking, Michael, are you crazy? What are you thinking? That, my friends, is not the wisdom from above. That was the wisdom from below. See, the key to controlling our speech is what is controlling our hearts, our minds, which will play into controlling our lives, and then ultimately will control our speech. So I drew that last little thing, the originating wisdom, I call it, because not all wisdom is God's wisdom. You know, sometimes we think we're pretty smart, we think we're pretty wise, and we ruin things out of the wisdom that we act out of or speak out of. Whatever your originating wisdom is, it's going to impact your heart, your mind, your emotions, and that's going to impact your speech and your behavior. And so that's where we need to be asking God to work at us in that deeper levels as we're trying to speak well. All right, let's all stand up. I'm going to call for the prayer team to come up to the front. I do have a tip for the day, for the week. But I think it's a really difficult one. I don't know if I can do it. But I guess we can fail together trying if we want to take this tip. And then try it for an hour. Or try it for a day, try it for the week. Probably start out trying in the hour. But here, let's try this. Don't say anything to someone without asking yourself first, what will be the impact? What will be the impact? So before you say something to someone, just ask, what will be the impact? Then go right ahead and say it. I'm not telling you to do that, but then you'll be quite aware probably of what's going on and won't say it again. Something was really bothering me this morning, even while we were in here, and I got my phone out and was going to start creating a little email so I don't forget. And Donna looks at me and goes, do you really want to do that now? No, I do not want to do that now. Turned it off and put it away. What will be the impact? All right, we're done here this morning. These guys are here to pray with you. Whatever is going on in your life, doesn't matter. Anything, issues with God, issues with your family, issues with money, whatever can go wrong in our lives, God's interested and would really like to help you with that. So let somebody pray with you this morning. I'm going to just pray the blessing now because we're running a little late here. And then you're free to go, but get prayer before you do if you'd like to. So, before I pray, I just want to say, God loves you. God loves you. May He fill our mouth with good things, with healing words, with life-giving words. May His power and love change our hearts that we might be free, free to speak on His behalf, free to do good for others by the words we speak and write. The Lord is with you. Amen. Hey, thanks guys for being here. Have an awesome week, and see you soon.